Welcome to the DJE Podcast, where you will learn about real estate investing from real life examples. Here's your host, Devin Elder.
Okay, today on the show, we have Mr. Ryan McKenna, who is a full-time real estate investor and founder of McKenna Capital, which is a private equity firm that provides opportunities for investors to become passive equity partners in institutional quality, recession-resistant real estate. So McKenna Capital focuses on value-add multifamily, self-storage, and manufactured home parks. McKenna Capital has helped investors allocate capital across 7,000 plus units with combined asset value over $700 million. So you got a couple of commas in there. Love it. Good stuff. Without further ado, Mr. Ryan McKenna, how are you?
I'm doing great, Devin. Thanks again for having me on your show here.
Yeah, my pleasure. And can't wait to kind of dive in on your story. And obviously, we talk a lot about multifamily investing. And then you're involved in some other classes, asset classes too, which I want to touch on kind of selfishly, curiously. Like, I we participate in multifamily stuff in one market, and that's kind of it. So I know there's other stuff out there that's working for people, but we don't really touch on it. You didn't always do real estate commercial investing. What was the, I guess we could start with where are you located and what's your background kind of leading up to before you got started in real estate?
Yeah, great. So I'm located in Glenview, Illinois, just a suburb north of Chicago. And prior to getting into this full time, let's see, I spent about 10 plus years in the insurance business. Prior to that, I was third generation in a family business. And always had real estate on my mind. Actually learned about real estate syndication when I was playing baseball at Arizona State and had a teammate of mine. His father was an apartment syndicator. So that really just kind of sparked things in my mind at some day that like I wanted to be involved with that. And so it just took a little bit of time for me to find my way. I started with some single family rentals and then realized if I really wanted to scale that it would be the multifamily syndication. So I constantly was someone who was out there learning, asking questions, reading a ton of books, and then eventually just took action on it. And then what I was able to build happened, you know, relatively quickly, but it was many years in the making of just learning and kind of seeing what else was out there and how others were doing it. So that was kind of my background, leading up to this. And I was someone who always had the side hustle in mind. And I created a couple other small businesses that helped fund some of the real estate eventually. And then did enough real estate investments passively to then walk away from my job recently. So pretty cool how it all came together. And it's something that's not impossible to do. It's actually not that hard if you can be diligent and smart about your investments.
Love it. And I definitely want to dig into some pieces of this story, especially leaving the corporate job. Kudos to you for doing that. I think the corporate job has, especially if it's highly compensated, has a lot of gravity to it. Benefits, pay, et cetera. And that can really kind of keep people in that gravity for forever, right? If you don't make a conscious decision to get out. So kudos for breaking free of that. I want to go back to a comment you said about your buddy's dad that was a syndicator when you were younger. Was there like a particular moment, like did he have an awesome car or a great lifestyle? Or was there something that made you say, I want to do that? What's that guy do?
So it was around the time when the book Rich Dad Poor Dad came out by Robert Kiyosaki. Okay. And it was a time in my life where I went to Arizona State on a baseball scholarship. It was my dream school. It was, you know, an opportunity to put me on a platform that, you know, the next step is really to go on and play pro baseball and try to get to the big leagues. And so that was a dream of mine. I'd worked really hard to put myself in position to get there. And the timing of it all with real estate came into my life when my baseball dream was basically gone. I was diagnosed with ITP. It was a blood platelet disorder at the end of my sophomore year. And, doctors told me you'll never play again. And so I literally was, you know, in and out of 20 hospitals and trying to figure out what was going on. And just in the middle of my baseball career, you know, I'm now kind of, you know, bedridden in the hospital. So I had to start looking at where my life was going to go. What was I going to fall back on? And that's really when real estate came into the picture here, not only with the Rich Dad, Sportad book, which was a blueprint for me and my investing philosophy. But my teammate's father, I was really intrigued why, you know, how they were able to go in and purchase these 200-300 unit apartment complexes. I just thought it was fascinating to kind of accumulate that much money to go buy, you know, a multi-million dollar apartment complex. And that's when I first learned about what a syndication was and how he was pooling together investments from other interested individuals to then, you know, buy a value add a multifamily apartment. And he really, you know, took a liking to me early on as I expressed interest and curiosity. And while I was in the hospital, he would send me books on it and I would read up on it and learn about it. And I just thought it was really cool. And I know he did very well financially. So that was a big driving factor as I thought, you know, someday I was going to go play in the major leagues and make a lot of money and then just invest it all. And that didn't happen. And I looked at real estate syndication and what he was doing as, you know, my other alternative opportunity that I could still make pro athlete money doing. It was just going to be in a different way. And some of the other benefits that I remember him telling me was that, you know, he gets to design his own schedule. He gets to get up every morning, make breakfast and eat breakfast with his kids and get them off to school and could control, you know, what he did and how he did it and the type of projects he worked on. And that to me was very, very appealing and something that I felt like, wow, if I can combine all the things I love about investing in real estate and have all the freedom and flexibility with my family and just do something I'm totally passionate about and love. I mean, that's what really drew me to it and how I kind of got involved with it just through, you know, a situation in my life that, you know, was kind of a, you know, a dark period, but I took the most out of it and I don't have any regrets. It was nothing I could control, but I'm totally fine now, 100% healthy and just living a great life. And, you know, I love the path that I'm on and how I got there really started back, you know, in those early years of playing baseball in college.
Yeah. Thanks for diving into the detail on that. That's really powerful. And it seems like a lot of folks that have become successful do have some sort of a pain point as these, I mean, it just, I hear this story over and over again on the podcast from people that are successful as there was some sort of pain driver, right? I think pain is a big motivator more so than other things. So thanks for the detail on that. So you kind of got the bug early and kind of saw maybe what was possible. I think it's really important for people to have somebody in their life, whether it's a mentor or family member or friend, that it's actually doing it. And I think that does something to our brain that says, well, this is a real person that I know that's doing it, not just a book. And I think that's a super powerful step for anybody to have kind of in the process. So you got a sense of the large projects and that maybe how they were structured, how you didn't necessarily have to have $20 million cash, you know, in your bank account to go out and buy a property, that you put a team together and syndicate it. What was your first foray into real estate investing on your own? You talked a little bit about single family earlier.
Yeah, that was actually after I left Arizona State. At the time the market was doing very well. But then a few years later we hit the crash, but we had a vacation rental we were doing, you know, with, you know, VRBO, which is probably similar to Airbnb today. And so I had a few, single family rentals where we were doing that. And, you know, I learned the business, I got some exposure. But I also realized that I didn't necessarily enjoy, you know, dealing with tenants and having to field those calls and having to make a lot of those decisions that just seemed like it was more active than passive. And, you know, I looked at what I was projecting from a return standpoint and the amount of time I put into it, it didn't seem to be adding up. And then going back to, you know, what I knew and what I learned about the apartment syndication investments, I mean, the numbers were just staggering. And that's one thing that probably stuck in my mind of, you know, the type of returns that could be made. And I just felt like, you know, I needed to get to that. And so that's when I started saving money so I could then invest in the apartment syndications, because for the amount of time and effort I was putting in and just the hassle and the headaches, and, you know, you're doing it part-time. It wasn't like I was an expert real estate investor back then. You know, now you're taking on your own asset where I think there's a lot more liability than if I were to put that money in a, you know, with a professionally managed, you know, real estate firm that has done this over and over again, that has a really strong track record. So after a few years of doing that, then I went back to my mentor, and he's a syndicator out of Seattle. And I invested in 5 deals with him early on, 5 multifamily syndications. And so, you know, for me, what was important is looking at the track record, you know, the history, and, you know, to see, and I know there's a lot of firms out there, but, you know, we're talking, you know, 25-30%, you know, annual returns over a period of 20 years, which is just like phenomenal. And that part is just, you know, I look at compounding, you know, your growth and just being able to be part of some of these opportunities. And that's not to say that that's going to be the returns going forward, but, you know, you have a starting point that's pretty significant. And so I looked at that as like, well, I'm just going to diversify and get into this. And so that really started the passive investing, you know, I guess, path that I went down, which I think is different than most, because I did start doing some of the active, but then quickly changed after I realized it wasn't going to be possible to scale, and it wasn't really kind of what I thought it was all cracked up to be.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Passive investing is a great buzzword. I've done a lot of different real estate investments, you know, single families, flips, rentals, Airbnb, multifamily, et cetera, all that stuff. But really kind of the only one in my mind that's passive is limited partner equity in a deal. And that truly is passive, other than your education and your due diligence on the team and feeling good about the deal and the sponsor. But once you made that decision and you're in the deal, there's literally nothing to do. It's 100% passive. And I don't think there's other vehicles out there, direct investment real estate vehicles, that can compete with that, right? I mean, it's a truly hands-off deal, scales infinitely, all that stuff.
Yeah, I would totally agree with you, because as someone who was looking at just the investing landscape of what options were out there, I mean, luckily I knew about apartment syndication, so I almost read every book there was on commercial real estate investing that was related to apartments and multifamily, and then also was trying to find other avenues too, because at this point I really had the goal of like, I wanted to kind of invest my way out of the corporate world. And so looking for the most attractive opportunities. And the great thing besides just the very, you know, outsized risk adjusted returns that we see, you know, is the cash flow element that you get from basically day one, which I think is really important when you look at like, you know, that passive income stream that comes in that could cover your expenses and allow you to then, you know, maybe leave a job or have more flexibility. But I think the real kicker in a lot of these opportunities, and again, if I compare it to the stock market, I mean, it's like a no-brainer, but you also have the tax benefits, which are phenomenal. And that was something I didn't truly appreciate until you actually got in there and you started seeing the K-1s and then how you're able to shelter a lot of that income. And it just, now I know why some of the wealthiest people invest in real estate. I mean, it's just, until you do it and you see it, I mean, then you have a path. And now it's just, it was a matter of like, all right, how can I accumulate enough capital to invest? Because I could kind of back into what I knew the returns might be from a cash flow perspective. Because the nice thing about these limited partnerships, you know, the reliability, consistency of the cash flow is generally pretty, you know, it's pretty strong, and there's not the volatility and the swings you have with a lot of the stock market. So I really like that. And it just became, this vehicle that I felt like most people don't even know about out there. And I was fortunate to learn about it at an early age, but I didn't have the capital. But when I did, I was able within 3 years to invest enough capital that I could put it to work, where it essentially allowed me to walk away from my job. So that I think is very powerful. And it's something that, again, it's not rocket science. It's just being able to have access to these types of deals and to kind of know which ones are good opportunities, how to vet them, and then also having the ability to take action when you do have some investable capital.
Yeah, love it. So for somebody that's not invested in a multifamily deal before, talk about what that K-1 is and what you mean by seeing that K-1 every year. What's on there and what's the impact of it?
Yeah, the nice thing about it is usually it will show a loss when you have the pass through of the, you know, the income and the depreciation. So typically the cash flow that, you know, we're seeing on average about 8% annual cash on cash return. So when that flows through the investor, normally the depreciation, if it's a straight line depreciation, say over 27 and a half years for an apartment complex, that alone should be more than enough to offset that 8%, that cash flow stream. So generally I was seeing K-1s where I'd have a, you know, several thousand dollar loss on it. And it was nice to see that money come in, to know that I had it, but I didn't have to pay taxes on it at this point. Yep. And so that 8%, you know, at the end of the day, it was like receiving 10 or 11% of my money, because I was putting it all back in my pocket. And then I was able to reinvest that, and instead of having to pay taxes on it now and have less to reinvest. So over time, it starts to snowball. And, you know, one of the other benefits that I'm seeing now in a lot of deals is, you know, with the cost segregation studies and just the acceleration of the depreciation that is happening on the front end, and nearly all the deals that I'm investing or that we're co-syndicating have the cost segregation study being done. And I've actually seen that first year loss come in as high as 60% of your initial investment into a deal. And to have that, that could shelter other investment income, or if you're a real estate professional, your other income or your spouse's income. I mean, it's just absolutely phenomenal. And I tell investors, you know, even if you can't use it this year, you can carry it forward to the next year or the following year. And so it's just, I just think a phenomenal benefit. I think the first time in the history of, you know, it is surpassing oil and gas as far as tax benefits. And so it's just a really fun time to be in this space. And again, it's not a get rich overnight type investment, but over time, you can really see it start to add up and compound, especially with the tax benefits.
100%. I just want to reiterate one of the things you said, you know, up to a 60%. So let's use that as a metric here. Somebody invests $100,000 in a project. Year one, they see an 8% return, you know, $2,000 a quarter in cash flow distributions. And then they get a K-1 with a negative $60,000 loss they could take that year. It's almost like, wait a minute, is this, you know, and people tell me, is this legal? And it's like, yeah, this is that the government is incenting us to go out and run these projects, right? And so they create, what the government creates whatever levers they can, and entrepreneurs go pull them and get these, get the prize. And the prize is these, you know, 60% paper loss in the first year. That's so I just wanted to highlight that, because people that have not been exposed to that concept are, you know, their minds are blown. I'm sure you have conversations around that all the time, but it's this is kind of every day for us commercial real estate investors.
Yeah, no, I think we don't fully appreciate, you know, when you're in it now, you're just like, you kind of come to expect it. But from the outside looking in, most investors aren't aware. And then it's like kind of a icing on the cake when they find out about it. But a lot of the sophisticated investors I work with, a lot of the entrepreneurs, business owners, I mean, they invest for the tax benefits. So they already know and are aware of it. And so, yeah, like you said, it's the government and wants to incentivize you for, you know, spurring economic development in certain markets, certain, you know, properties. And so it is, you know, very fulfilling and satisfying to see, you know, the growth, the value add that we can create in that local community and get rewarded for doing that, for bringing, you know, a better place for most people to live in. And it's just, it's completely legal. You're following the tax code, and it's just some great benefits to take advantage of while, you know, having fun and making money in, you know, in real estate.
Yeah. What's not to love? Tax yeah. benefits, having fun, making money. I mean,
that's awesome. It's all good.
Gotta love it. So you talked about kind of this 3-year journey, kind of leaving corporate. I mean, that is a really compressed time frame, right? And so what did that look like for you? You'd been exposed to syndications early, kind of knew that was something you wanted to pursue, but of course you did have a corporate career. Was there, talk to me about that transition, because I think there's a lot of people, I talk to them all the time, that have a good job, but they just want something better for themselves. And a lot of times it's money, but you alluded to at the top of the show is just that freedom. You know, your kids are growing up, you get one shot at that. I was listening to a book, I don't know if it was Gary Keller's, but I can't remember whose it was, but you know, I think a lot of us have this concept that, hey, we're going to work really hard now and we're going to make it up later. And the book made this point that, do you think having money and hanging out with your 17-year-old child is going to be the same as hanging out with them when they were 5 and missing their birthday party? Like, you're never making that up, right? And so you kind of have that. So the freedom for people or flexibility to schedule is I know a huge driver. How did your process go in a couple of years getting to the point where you could exit? I think that's really interesting for a lot of people.
Yeah. So basically I was in a pretty high paying role. I did very well in the insurance space. I also had another side business that I was running, kind of just nights and weekends, just as something that I started back in 2006. And I saw an opportunity to then get into real estate. And what I did is over a 3-year period, I'd invested in 12 deals as an LP. So as a limited partner. So I put, you know, almost $600,000 over a 3-year period into, you know, a diversified offering of value add multifamily investments. And so, you know, of the cash flow, I was getting about 8% of that on an you know, annual basis, which if you back into it, it's, you know, roughly right around $50,000. But what started happening at like, you know, the year two and three mark is that some of these deals were going through, you know, a cash out refinance. And so I would then have, you know, I had one deal that had 84% of my capital returned within 13 months. And, you know, basically almost 100% of my investment came back within 15 months, if you combine the cash flow. So when that started happening, that's when it really got fun. Cause for a couple of years, you feel like you're putting money out there and you're getting, I mean, 8% is nothing to sneeze at. I mean, it's a great, you know, return. And again, with the tax benefits, that's maybe more like 10 or 11%. But then when the cash out refi started happening, then I had that money on top of the cash flow. And then I very quickly got to about, you know, six figures of passive income coming in. And then as I continue to keep reinvesting, I just, you know, have gotten through that cycle where, you know, every year I'm going to have a couple cash out refis, then I'm going to have a couple exits. And then you just keep reinvesting. And every dollar I kept reinvesting, the cash flow streams kept getting higher because I had more capital at work. So I looked at that as like, you know, if someone has money and they want to make some investments because of the cash flow and the equity component and the tax benefits, you can literally buy your way into, you know, financial freedom here. And that's essentially kind of what I did. And it wasn't hard. It was more or less, you know, a lot of hard work over the years, a lot of investing and trying to be smart with my money. But like, once I felt like I got in with really good, operating partners, syndicators that I felt comfortable with, that I trust, that I felt like, all right, if I diversified myself into 10 or 12 opportunities, like I was going to be, you know, okay. And so once I made that decision and found those operators, then I just, you know, wired funds in and became a limited partner in the deal and didn't have to do any work after that. And It just was kind of amazing and pretty cool to like be able to sit back and just watch the cash flow come in, you know, month after month after I'd made these initial investments versus, you know, when I was actively managing it. It just, there were just, you know, expenses that would come in, calls, things that you would just deal with that would take you away from your job. And it just, it felt like it was more aggravating than anything. Whereas this allowed me to invest while I was still working full time. And I probably stayed a year or so extra, you know, my job, just because I wanted to give myself as much momentum as I could and invest, you know, have another year to invest this capital. So when I did walk away, I had a really good, you know, head start. And then I continue to this day to keep investing. I'm in probably close to 30 syndicated deals as an LP. And I just, you know, it's completely changed my life. And I feel like, you know, you start small and then you kind of figure out a path and then, you know, you keep replicating it. And that's really, you know, what I've seen. And I saw others do that too. And I just felt like, you know, if I want to emulate them and you know, multifamily value add and some of the self-storage manufactured home park deals that I've invested in have just, you know, really, in my mind, you know, created a pretty diversified, recession resilient, portfolio that I can, you know, go to bed at night knowing that's going to be there tomorrow.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Especially spread across so many different geographies, so many different asset classes. I mean, I think that's absolutely the way to do it. So that's a powerful story. And I love what you said about buying your way into financial freedom. I mean, at some point, you got to have some equity in something, you know, and going to work a high paying job where you don't have a sizable amount of equity. It's going to be tough to walk away from. So I think that was a big turning point for me, was realizing that, man, I don't have equity in anything, getting older, and that's not going to change without me proactively doing something about it. And once I stepped over to that way of thinking, things kind of exploded on that front. And so, I mean, it happens and people do it all the time.
I was going to say one thing. The nice thing really quick on that, just to kind of follow up comment, is that, you know, you can do it and it doesn't mean you have to walk away from your full-time job. I mean, you can just have it for, you know, stability or something to fall back on too. So that's the nice thing about passively investing. It's not going to take you away from your full-time job, but if you do it over a period of time and you end up accumulating, you know, some significant wealth, it gives you options. And when you have options, you can make choices that, you know, might be best for your family or yourself. And so for me, it wasn't about the money at that point. It was about, I've got my freedom. I've got the ability to, you know, put together my own schedule, spend more time with my kids, spend more time with my wife. And that was worth more than any amount of money that I could ever make in the corporate world and all the stress I had. And so all that went away when I was able to get to the point where I felt like, you know, I was comfortable enough that I didn't necessarily have to worry too much about where my money was coming from. And so I'm just thankful that I found these types of opportunities and was able to invest in them. And like you said, get that equity, because that was important. And to know that, you know, it's growing every single day, whether I'm, you know, out on vacation, you know, playing with the kids or doing something else. I mean, that money is going to work for me 24/7.
Yeah. Love it. Love it. So what is, so you've been out of the corporate job now for how long?
About 6 months.
6 months?
Yeah, about 6 months.
It's an interesting adjustment. Did you find yourself with too much time on your hands, or what does a day or a week look like for you now? Have you found a structure yet, or are you still kind of experimenting with that?
You know, I have a pretty good structure, but I am still trying to experiment. You know, the first thing that was, you know, was most notable is that I didn't have to set my alarm clock in the morning, you know, that was kind of one of those little things that I'm like, oh, that's kind of cool. I don't have to like rush to get on the train to then go take it downtown and then, you know, feel like I didn't get to spend enough time with my kids because I was worried about, you know, this meeting I had to get to, you know, like, so that part was nice to not have to deal with. I still get up with the kids, but it's just like, you know, can we kind of get up when we need to get up? But as far as, it's been life changing. I've been able to make every event that my daughters have at school and just awesome. To be there if my wife needs help. You know, and so early on, you know, I did have more flexibility, did have more time. I've been really busy lately as I'm now not only investing in a lot of these deals, but I'm co-syndicating or even syndicating deals. So what happened in that period as I was investing in my own deals, I had a lot of people in my network, people I worked with that just knew what I was doing and reached out and said, hey, you know, I want to do that too. Can you, you know, share with me with what you're doing? And that basically started a whole nother business for me, which is McKenna Capital. And so we go out and we partner with sponsors out there and we're co-sponsors and co-GPs on the deal. And so I built out a pretty big investor network of people that just want to do the same things that I'm doing. And then we're all kind of in this partnership together. I look at it as like back to my baseball days, you know, it's a team sport. We're all, you know, a small piece in a bigger, you know, asset that we're purchasing and we're all in this together. We're all along for the ride. So I've been very, very busy lately with just working with investors all day long. I spend my time talking to investors and the operating partners that we work really closely with. So I absolutely love that component of what I do and how I, you know, run my day. But it has been busy only because I think more and more people are finding out about these opportunities and there's just more and more interest. I mean, I see it daily and sometimes it's hard to keep up with the amount of interest, the amount of calls. So I think, you know, it'll be really interesting to see where this whole real estate syndication, you know, industry is in 5 years. I mean, I think we're just starting to see it take off because I think the number is probably somewhere, it's got to be 99% of the population just doesn't even know what a real estate syndication is, nor do they have access to these types of deals. And as we create more awareness, I mean, that's kind of like my mission. I want people to know about these type of opportunities. You know, they get to decide whether, you know, they want to invest in them or not, if it's a fit for them and their lifestyle. But I just think people should be aware of them and then they can make an educated decision on, hey, should I be diversifying a little bit of my money into these types of assets? Or, you know, maybe it's just not for me. But I think at a minimum, I want people to know, just like I learned about it from others and just like, you know, with what you do and just, I think it's important. And so that's really where I spend a lot of my time, just helping educate others, helping, you know, work with investors, kind of showing them, hey, here's how I did it. And you might have a different path or a different way, but, you know, here's something that I've learned from, you know, just either doing it or others. And so I just spend a lot of my time, you know, doing investor calls, meetings, coffees. And to me, that is not work. I mean, this is a passion that I absolutely, you know, am thrilled that it's my life's work now. I'm not sitting around twiddling my thumbs wondering, you know, what I'm going to do next. I mean, it's just,
you could, it's opened up, but it's a choice.
Yeah. It's a choice. Yeah. And it's opened up so many more opportunities by being able to do this full time. And so, it's kind of the sky's the limit. And, but I also know that, you know, I don't want to get too far away from, you know, the reasons that I got into this initially for the freedom, the flexibility. So there are certain times where I have to kind of scale myself back a little bit, but I've been having a lot of fun with it, and it's been growing, and we've done well. So, you know, I'm going to continue as long as I've got the energy and the endurance. You know, we're going to keep pushing forward, keep looking at new opportunities.
Yeah. Love it. That's so great that you have the choice. You play golf every day if you want.
Yeah.
Or you could go kind of get into this business. And the business is, you know, once you get the hang of it is, I mean, I look at it as probably the most exciting thing I could be doing outside of, you know, family stuff, vacations. It's like, man, I love this stuff. So, I mean, why wouldn't I want to spend some time doing this? I love what you said about, or, you know, I think there's a real important element around you're talking to investors. Maybe somebody's got no idea about this stuff. You're kind of introducing to them this concept to them. And it's always fun to see a kind of a light bulb go off or to hear like the incredulousness in somebody's voice of, wait, how much of a write-off do I get in the first year? That's incredible. But I think there's a very important aspect that you bring to those conversations of having achieved the result already. And I have a problem kind of with, you know, sorry if any financial planners listening, but you know, you want to be dealing with people that already have the result that you want. The same way that you wouldn't talk to somebody that's grossly overweight about your fitness plan. You kind of don't want to take advice from somebody financially that isn't where you want to be. And so if somebody's got a reasonable net worth already, or they've got some cash to deploy, it's a mismatch for them to talk to somebody that doesn't already have that result. And so I think you bring a lot of credibility to those conversations of, listen, this, you're basically just sharing the playbook on what you've already done. And then at that point, it's just kind of purely education and trying to show people the way. I love that component of it.
Thanks, Devin. Yeah, no, that part's been fun, just being able to, you know, it's almost like they're investing alongside me, or we're all in this together. And so, there's that aspect of, you know, I'm there for the ride, holding their hand through the process. And I think for some, they making that jump into doing their first deal, it's important to have someone that they can go and talk to ask questions, that's done this before, that knows a lot about the deal, the operating partners, and just the being involved in the whole process in many different aspects. I definitely think that, you know, there's a lot there for someone that, you know, has those questions, that if you can be there to help them out, you know, whether they are just kind of educating themselves or interested in investing, it doesn't really matter to me. I like to see that spark go off in their mind where they're just like, God, you know, this is great. And the biggest response I get from most investors is like, why did I not know about this 15 years ago? Like what I could have grown my net worth to. I mean, that is probably the biggest revelation that most investors say to me, and I'm there with them too. I tell them I knew about it. I just wish I had the capital to invest 15 years ago. You know.
Yep. Yeah, that's right. And you can't look back too long. Yeah. Woulda, shoulda, coulda. You know, you just got to make a plan and move forward. Let's, if you don't mind, if you kind of indulge me on the mobile home park space. I've got a lot of buddies that are in that. I have not really looked at it. And then self storage, kind of the same thing. I know guys that do it. I just haven't personally invested in it. What are some kind of highlights that you like about each of those asset classes?
Yeah, the reason we chose to invest in those asset classes, along with the value add multifamily apartments, is that if you look back over the last 25 years in real estate investing, those have been the top three performers. And so there's a track record there of, you know, these assets performing very well. And then, you know, looking forward, there's the, you know, the trends, everything's is lining up to, you know, have those be the top three assets, you know, for the next, you know, 10, 20 years. And so, one reason that I think, as we were doing a lot of value add multifamily, we were in different locations, but we also wanted to further diversify into different niches, and the manufactured home parks, the self storage, they had a lot of similar elements to the value add, you know, strategy and process. You know, you get the cash flow, you have the equity in there, but I felt like, you know, all three asset classes, perform very well in a downturn. There is that resiliency there. So for us, it was like, you know, we like investments that cash flow, and that, you know, in a downturn, you could actually make an argument that there's actually more demand, not from a standpoint of trying to sell and exit a deal, but like from the just, you know, tenant interests. For example, like, you know, manufactured home parks. I mean, this is affordable housing. We have a crisis here in the United States. There's not enough affordable housing. Yep. And even with some of the mobile home parks we do, I mean, I think in all of last year, there was only 10 new parks built. And so you've got some, you know, supply issues here where, you know, there's a couple of reasons for the mobile home manufactured home parks that, you know, make it challenging for new development. And you got the fact that, you know, there's a lot of neighborhoods and cities that just, you know, don't want them near them because of the stigma around, you know, a mobile home park or a trailer park, whatever you want to call it. And then the other thing is that, you know, that just from a tax basis, there's just not enough revenue that the city gets from them, so that you're kind of, you got these big plots of land. And so it just doesn't make it that attractive. But if you're an owner of the park, you know, you're essentially like a land play. You're renting out the plots that these homes sit on. And these are, you know, people buy these homes and they're planning on living there for a long time because it's super expensive to move from one park to the next. So you kind of have a captive audience in a way that, you know, they're paying you a monthly, you know, rent on the plot or the land that their home is sitting on. And so there's a lot of value add elements of it, but it's pretty consistent cash flow when, you know, the alternative is they don't pay, you know, you're at risk of losing, you know, your home or where you live. And so like there's incentive for, you know, your tenants to pay on time and to, you know, this is, if you can help enhance the community that they live in, I mean, that's, you know, that's great. And so we see, I think that the manufactured mobile home parks, I mean, the NOI ever since the crash has grown each quarter and just some phenomenal results. And, it, you know, we're starting to see some of the bigger players get involved. I think for a while it was, again, the stigma, like, oh, you're investing in mobile home parks. I mean, I talked to a lot of mobile home park operators and they're just like, oh, man, the secret's out. People know about these really high cash flowing assets that, you know, they were flying on the radar for years. But if you look at it, you know, two of the biggest players in that space are Warren Buffett and Sam Zell. I mean, if that tells you anything, the two smart guys, they kind of know what they're doing. So we're seeing a lot of more institutional capital come into that space. It's a fragmented space. So a lot of mom and pop owners. So some of the, you know, the efficiencies and, you know, for every dollar you can save in these types of deals, just like value add multifamily, I mean, that adds up and significantly can boost the NOI and the value of these parks. So a lot of times we just see neglect. You see, you know, a lot of consideration for maybe certain tenants where they'll let them like slip on the rent or just things weren't, you know, aren't managed professionally. So when you can come in and manage it professionally and scale it, there's a lot of money that can be made there. So very, very attractive from an investment standpoint. You know, with self-storage, you know, that's one of those in good times, it does well, people buy more things, and in bad times, it's like people still kind of hold on to them, their stuff. And, you know, usually, you know, in a situation where say the economy is not doing well and maybe a business needs to shut down and, you know, temporarily, or, you know, someone loses their home and they need to store their stuff. I mean, there's still demand for those types of, you know, self-storage units because people look at that situation. Maybe it's temporary where I have to move in with family and, but I need to store my stuff, or even a business that's growing that, you know, if you're in class A and you want to store files somewhere, that's something that maybe you don't need access to all the time. Instead of, you know, paying an exorbitant amount for the, you know, square footage in class A, you can offload it into self-storage. So we just see just a lot of great uses in a good time and in a bad time. And the average self-storage rental is about 3 years long. So most people, when they put their stuff in self-storage, they don't come back to get it. And that's, you know, that's monthly revenue that you get for someone that just kind of, you know, put it in there and forgot about it. And so, so just, it's a really sticky business and you can typically get some pretty good rent bumps. And there's a lot of variability in the pricing because you can have, unlike multifamily where, you know, the tenants kind of know what the going rate is for each, you know, each apartment, you could have, you know, in theory, one unit next to the other and pay two totally different prices, based upon, you know, what the rental demand is. So there's some of that dynamic pricing that can go on that can be very attractive. And then the other thing, you know, when you do a rent increase, let's just say, you know, we see a lot of times where it's maybe 6%, every 6 months. So if someone's spending $100 to, you know, rent out a self-storage unit, like if they got to pay $6 more, I mean, the chances of them going to get a moving truck to go then, you know, move it across the street where they're charging the same $6 more, it just generally doesn't really happen. So, you know, if you do that twice a year, in some cases, you know, you might be able to get a 12% bump just on the rental of the self-storage. Yeah. And same thing with the mobile home parks, where, you know, we typically see in the first year when we go through and add, you know, some of the value add process to the deal. I mean, we might be able to add 10% to the rent and then maybe 5%, you know, each year after. So for some of those reasons, you know, it's a very sticky business. You know, I think the one thing in self-storage, you want to be in an area where, it's pretty dense and there's, it's harder for someone to maybe buy some land up and then throw on a new self-storage facility. So you want to always look at, like, you know, what the supply and demand is. And so, we just kind of look at those opportunities and, again, diversify at the end of the day. And investors, I think, really like having choices. And so we've seen a lot of interest in those other two asset classes beyond the multifamily.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. The self-storage is really intriguing. I bet if you told somebody walking in the door wanting to rent a space that the average tenure is 3+ years, they're thinking, oh, this is for 6 weeks or it's for 2 months. And then one thing leads to another and you're paying $100 and you see
are lazy. It's not fun to go in and have to get your stuff out of there. And when it's not that, again, maybe $100 to some is a lot, but some, it's the nuisance of the hassle. And sometimes they just set it and forget it. And, it's just kind of how it works sometimes.
Yeah. And no plumbing, no repair and maintenance, turnover costs really minimal. So that's good stuff.
Yeah. It's very profitable because you don't have to have a lot of people on staff to manage it. In some cases it can be, self-managed and, and the turn of a self-storage unit when someone leaves, if they don't take their stuff, we can auction it off. If they do, we're just, sweeping out the floor real quick and then we can put someone else right back in there. So it's pretty easy. The turn is just very simple. And then there's additional revenue streams too. Typically when we acquire a self-storage facility, we're buying it from a mom and pop operator, just like I mentioned with some of the mobile home manufactured home parks. Mm-hmm. And they might not be taking advantage of, it's pretty easy to get a contract with U-Haul. And to then be in business for the moving services and get paid off of, every time someone rents a U-Haul truck from you. Same thing with like tenant insurance on the, on their valuables, just, locks, boxes, tape, things like ancillary items that, you could sell that people need. So very quickly, you can add some value and drive up some revenue that maybe wasn't being recognized or, before with the previous owner.
Yep, that makes sense. Any crazy auction stories? You find any pots of gold or anything, or is it just
kind No. I mean, usually stuff's not worth too much. I mean, we haven't found gold yet, but maybe one day we'll get lucky. But I would think the person that knew that was in there would probably not leave it there. But
sure,
but yeah, nothing exciting that I could share.
Yeah, I had to ask. There's these storage TV shows that probably That's great. Well, I appreciate the overview on those two asset classes. I mean, I think, for me, the takeaway message on all three, value add multifamily, self-storage and mobile home parks is constant high demand and recession resistant. I mean, you're not selling a niche product. You're selling a product absolutely for the masses in good times and bad. And that's a sound strategy, for any investment. So love it. This has been really great, Ryan. I appreciate it. If somebody wants to reach out and kind of learn more about what McKenna Capital's up to, maybe get kind of in your universe, what's the best avenue for them to do that?
So the best way is just go to our website. It's McKennaCapital.com. And I have a lot of information there that, you can kind of peruse. And if you're interested, feel free to sign up on, we have an investor distribution list to keep you in the loop and everything we're working on. You can also reach out to me. My email address is ryan@mckennacapital.com. And I'd be happy to jump on a call and talk further.
Yeah, perfect. Well, we'll link to that in the show notes for sure. But thanks so much for sharing your story. Really inspiring, getting out of the corporate, rat race, so to speak. And I think you provide a lot of value. So thank you very much, Ryan.
Oh, thanks, Devin. Appreciate you having me on.
All right. Take care.
You too.
Thank you for listening to the DJE Podcast. For more information, please go to djetexas.com.